95.7 Ben FM Philadelphia presents Her Story, hosted by Kathy Romano. Her Story is a weekly tribute to women making a major difference in the lives of others by telling her story.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Welcome to the live and in-person edition of Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. Today's special guest is the chief meteorologist at ABC News, reporting the nation's weather on Good Morning America and covering every major weather event for the network. She's an award-winning meteorologist. She hosts Food Forecast, starred in renovation reality's Ben and Ginger, and won third place on Dancing with the Stars in 2017. She's adventurous. She is the first female chief meteorologist for any network, and she can shake fringe on a costume like a pro. Please welcome Ginger Z.
Thank you so much. This is a good-looking group. Thank you all so much for having me. I know I got right off the show and ran right here, so don't mind my obnoxious full plaid head to toe. It's TV, right?
I actually got a text. They said, is she wearing the purple plaid? I said, yes, she is.
Yeah. It's like somebody said it was Welch's grape jelly. Somebody else said, there's a lot of things to say about it, but hey.
You look beautiful.
Here. Thanks. Can't miss me.
Well, thank you for coming. We really appreciate you being here and doing this for us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for traveling down. And Philadelphia is not new to you. You come here often.
No, I feel like, well, you're right down the road. It's truly around the corner. But I'm here almost every year for Thanksgiving. The only Thanksgivings I have not been here was when I was pregnant or was having a baby. So that's the only times I've missed you on Thanksgiving. I love the parade. Love to be a part of it. The oldest in the nation. We always do a big thing on GMA. So, and then I've done the flower show several years in a row.
Which is amazing. We were talking about that before and how I went to the flower show this year by myself. Mm-hmm. And it was like invigorating. I'm like, I love that I'm here by myself and I'm not chasing a kid or having to also.
I said, I really think this is a function of our age. I think that the older you get, the more you love like horticulture. I started bird watching suddenly and I was like, what am I love this. They're so fascinating. So I'm pretty sure that's what's happening.
So you are fascinating. We talked before we brought you out here, and you were telling me about your career. So just tell everybody that's here today, why meteorology and why you chose that?
So when I grew up in Michigan. I was actually born in Southern California, but we moved very quickly to Michigan. And I was, after my parents' divorce, my mom was dating our dentist, which is a weird story. I mean, it was too fast, too. Like, come on. And the dentist had, like, dentist money. So it was the first time I had been to a cottage that was on Lake Michigan. If you've ever been to Lake Michigan, that's, like, the ocean. That's what it looks like. So we spent the summer at this guy's cottage. They never got married, by the way. They did get engaged. He left her the week of the wedding. It was horrible. I know.
What?
I know.
Oh, your poor mom.
So anyway, he's instrumental, even though he was a terrible human being, in my career, because that cottage let me see storms for the first time. When you look across the ocean, you can see a thunderstorm in all of its glory. You can see the lightning. You can see the power of the atmosphere. And my brother and I spent so many times where, I don't know where my mom was, I guess with the dentist, but like we were playing alone. And we were sitting there, you know, making sandcastles, and then the thunderstorms would start up. We saw waterspouts come across the lake. And that summer is when I really fell in love with the atmosphere. And so I walked away from that summer going to third grade, which is, you know, young to be thinking this. And I remember diving into the encyclopedias and going for the weather section and going straight to the tornado section and wanting to know more about how these, you know, forces of nature came to be. And then when I was a sophomore in high school, a movie called Twister came out. And when I saw Helen Hunt as this female scientist storm chaser, badass, looking at the tornadoes and bringing everybody with her, I thought, now I know what I want to do with this. And so I went to a college, Valparaiso University, to study storm chasing. And that's, I don't know how I got on Dancing with the Stars. Like, that doesn't make any sense. There's a lot that happens between there, but I only studied weather and I only studied meteorology. So
what goes into storm chasing?
Yeah, so storm chasing is it's like in college we got 3 credits to go for 10 days and find tornadoes. And I always say, like, people will say, well, why would you do that? It's like a doctor working on a patient. They wouldn't just read the textbook of how to do surgery. They would go out, feel it, touch it, see it, smell it. I mean, when I go to Storm Chase and when I look at a radar, I can be in Chicago watching a radar and know what the atmosphere looks, feels, and smells like when these tornadoes are forming because I've been there. And so storm chasing is really, for me, an education. We would take those trips. I was telling you, I was part of a
tell them
super nerdy group. It was called VUSIT. It's a meteorology fraternity, okay? I was in a meteorology fraternity, a storm chasing fraternity, and we would go for day chases to Iowa. My college was in Indiana. We would go see a tornado and drive back. And so that validation of a forecast, going and knowing the area that you want to kind of focus on, and back then, we had to pull over at libraries to log onto the internet. Like, think about, we didn't have the internet in our pocket like we used to. So that was like serious storm chasing. We used our eyes a lot of the times and we had lightning detectors on our cars. And so storm chasing was a way that I was able to know the atmosphere better than I ever could have as a meteorologist who just learns from a book. Since then, and I would say something that I've added, I think every meteorologist should chase a lot because I think that it really helps you to understand it. I've now, because of this job, done a lot of paragliding, where I'm jumping off of mountains and flying into the thermals. I'll tell you right now, I would understand the atmosphere even better now that I've started doing that. So just a couple of suggestions for Bridge Young. All of you are like, my kids are never.
Not doing that, no.
It's a horrible idea.
I looked at some of the stuff you did, and I was thank you, no, never. Yeah. Talk about there was some sort of mistake that somebody made that got you your first internship, which you say pretty much led you to your career.
So here I was storm chasing in my storm chasing fraternity, as one does, with the first storm chase video I have of myself, I'm ducking from the camera. I'm so shy, and I never would have thought about going into television. But one of my professors saw this in me, and he said, why don't you just do an internship in TV? I think the way that you come up and speak in front of the class, I think you could do it. Because when I was communicating science, I wasn't as shy. And so he inspired me to go try to do an internship. I never do anything half out, so I went and sent like 90 resumes as a freshman. Nobody wrote back. Like, no one wants a freshman as an intern. And there was a mistake. Someone pulled the wrong resume in Birmingham, Alabama, and called me on the last day of school and say, hey, y'all know the Birmingham area well? And I was like, sure. Yes, I do. And I moved there for the summer, and I ended up doing an internship with someone who is a king in our industry. So it was that fortuitous moment when they say, you know, it's all about work. And this was just kind of a moment that was given to me, and I'm so blessed by every single day when I know that this was the moment that it turned. So I did an internship with this guy who's truly the best scientist, family man, communicator. And I fell in love with the way he communicated science. And I thought, now I want to be James Spann, which is what his name is, and Helen Hunt. And I think that's like what I am. I'm like, they had a baby. That's what I became. So.
And you still talk to him today.
I do. He's still my mentor today. He's been he's still a force in the weather world.
Did he help you get your first job?
He did not help me get my first job, but I would say that he coached me along the way, where I would send him my VHS tapes, and then he would tell me, like, here's something else you could do, or, you know, improve on this point, for sure.
So what was your first job?
So then I came back from that internship, fully, like, headstrong, like, okay, I'm going to be a meteorologist on TV now. And there was a flyer in our dorms, and it said, Maryville, Indiana, PBS station, meteorologist wanted. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's for me. And so I worked at a PBS station for 2 years while I was in college. I auditioned and I got the job, and it was over a bunch of seniors, and they were very salty about it, and they still are today. And that was my first. And then I worked in radio right when I got out of school, which I was saying, radio was the training ground to tell a story without picture, and there's no better way to describe a storm than without picture. And so I feel like that's where my career really took off.
You not only were a meteorologist, but you also did general reporting at some point.
Yes. So then I worked that was at a classic rock station in Grand Rapids. Then I got my first job in Flint, Michigan. So I did general reporting in a place where there's a lot of general reporting to be done, Flint, Michigan. I did everything, murder, fire, you name it. And then on the weather, on the weekends.
So all around, you got the experience. You got yourself to ABC in New York.
Yeah, I mean, four stations later, yes.
Right, of course.
So jump, 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 and then Chicago, and then I started moonlighting at MSNBC, and then Early Today, and then ABC.
Talk about going to a weather event. So not storm chasing, but your work is sending you into a blizzard, into a hurricane, whatever it is, where people are being evacuated, and you're traveling in.
So that's where the Helen Hunt part came in. When I went to interview at ABC, there was a man named Ben Sherwood who was the president of ABC at the time. And I told him, I feel like the thing network isn't doing is going before the storm. Our science, even in the 20 years that I've studied it, has gotten, or 25 now, has gotten so good at being zoned in. I said, we can be there the night before warning people. We can be there the day of chasing and showing the amazing pictures of the tornado, of the hurricane, and we can be there then to tell the story after. And I think that full, complete look at weather was what we needed to do, and that's what I'm proud to say I think that I've helped cultivate at ABC as a way that we look at weather and the way that we tell a weather story.
You've obviously covered so much. What's the most intense storm you've experienced personally?
Hurricane Katrina for me was, and hopefully will never be repeated. I mean, not just storm-wise, because Hurricane Michael, I was in the eye wall of a Cat 5 less than a year ago. I was in Mexico Beach, Florida, and I don't know if you remember the pictures, but that Category 5 storm had 160 mile-per-hour winds in it. The storm surge was 12 to 15 feet, and I was in one of the very few buildings that survived. And so I was able to watch as homes were bobbing down the street, shredding on each other. And those are the types of images that have driven me into doing this in the first place, but also have kind of evolved my career over time. I mean, Katrina was the first time, my first big storm. I mean, it was the first storm I had really covered, and it was Hurricane Katrina. That one, to me, societally, was the most interesting. So I went into it being the nerd that I was, like, oh, I can't wait to see the water line, how high that was. And it's like someone comes up to me and they're like, I'm so thirsty, we don't have water. And so I realized at that point in my career, it was very pivotal that my job isn't just being a scientist, it's telling these people stories and it's getting them help. And that is a huge part of what I do now. So after Michael, something that happened to me that never happened in my career, when we left the next day and we were hiking out, because of course, I lost my third rental car. I always know I'm going to lose the rental car. Like, I know it's not going to be with us any longer. Yeah, National doesn't rent to me anymore. I'm on the blacklisted. So we're hiking out with our stuff, and I'm meeting people and interviewing them. And every person I met, I said, why did you stay? And they said, because I didn't have a way to get out. No car, no money, didn't speak English. The number of people that I met, I've done this a long time, it was flooring me. And so I think what I've done now, and I'm working on getting sponsorship for, because I think somebody needs to do this, is do the rescue before the rescue. It's like our science has gotten good. If we know that a Mexico Beach, Florida is going to happen, like we knew the night before, that's why I was there. I know where that's where I go. If we can go and we can get them out, that's the story. It's that rescue before the rescue. And so on Saturday mornings now on ABC, thank you. And at worst, or at best, we take them somewhere for 12 hours, the storm hits and their house is fine and we bring them back to it. I mean, is that the worst thing that happens? So that's my goal with storm chasing and with storytelling. And that's why on Saturday mornings I have a show on ABC now. It's called Hearts of Heroes. And it's all about the heroes that go into the storm, hearing more from them.
I mean, that's an excellent point. We were just talking about the Bahamas and that they just couldn't, there was nowhere for them to go. A lot of them didn't have anywhere to go.
Islands are tough. Islands, this isn't going to work as well, you know, because to put people, you'd have to have barges to be able to do this in time. We had a crew on Abaco, on Marsh Harbor, that got hit the hardest with those 185 mile per hour winds. Actually, my old intern was one of our producers on that island during that storm. And he called me that morning and he said, okay, I'm scared. This is real. This is happening. And I said, tell me about the specs of the building you're in, because there are buildings that can survive. He had 10-inch thick cement walls and ceiling. He was on the third floor, and I knew the surge wouldn't go above 30 feet. So it all checked out. And He said, I'm going to try to call you during the storm once the satellite phone works. And he called me during the eye, and he said, can you call my mom? And I'm like, oh, now I'm responsible for calling and tell her that I'm okay, because the sat phone only works for, you know, it works with ABC something. So I called his mom, and she's like, you got him interested in this? Like, I'm sorry. But he was fine.
He was okay.
But telling the stories now, that's the hard part, is often we hear about them for a week. And in a place like Hurricane Florence, people are still living in tents in North Carolina. They still have trailers that are available, but they're not hooked up to gas and water. So these are the stories that we don't get to tell as often on TV as I'd like. But I love to do it on Saturday morning, and that's what we've been doing with the show.
So do you scope out where you're going to go, like in a specific building?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like, when it's going to be that level of hurricane, I mean, most hurricanes, a Cat 1, a Cat 2, as long as you're right away from the storm surge, and you have interior rooms, and you're not going to be shredded from the top, from the winds, from the roof, most places you're going to be okay. But if you're right at the water's edge, you can't be on a first, second floor.
Of course.
So that's pretty much what you're looking for.
Parahawking, hiking in the largest cave in the world in Vietnam, paragliding, swimming with the sharks, rappelling 27 stories down the side of a hotel, skydiving, ice boat racing. I'd ask you what you do for fun, but are you an adrenaline junkie?
I guess. I don't know. I think that's, my mom always says, do you have a death wish? Why are you doing this? I just find such comfort in these adventures of finding in life. And how it all started was when I started at ABC News, I had a producer who had been trying to get the World Cup of paragliding covered by one of his anchors. And he's like, nobody will ever do it. Would you consider it? And I was like, sure. Okay. And so I went down to Mexico and I told a story on monarch butterflies that was not at all related, but beautiful. And then I was able to go and do this World Cup of paragliding. And from the moment I jumped off that mountain, it was like jumping off a huge mountain at work, because that meant, oh, she jumps off of stuff? Oh, we're going to send her jumping off of things. And it was like everything they'd ever wanted. I've swam with 15-foot tiger sharks at this point. I was swimming with humpback whales this year in the Dominican Republic. Just unbelievable stuff. But the cave in Vietnam had only been explored or spelunked by like 200 people by the time we'd gotten there. It's the world's largest. And we were down there with scientists as they were finding new species. As we were down there, there were monkeys in a cave that had not been touched for, you know, as long as the Earth has been around. And so that type of science that's in every part of my job, I find, and also in the adventure.
And that's what you love.
And that's what I love. And so that gets me to jump off the mountain again. I'm like, okay.
Parahawking, what is that?
So parahawking, I flew into Pokhara, Nepal, which was like, had to go through Qatar to go to Kathmandu. It's a journey to get there. And the story was about the environment. Environmental stories are not easy to sell to a lot of people, especially when it was about vultures and the decline of a vulture population. But I found this group who was helping the vulture population get back by raising money, by giving people something called parahawking. So you go and you fly off of the Himalayas, jump, paraglide, and then you put your arm out with a piece of meat in it, and a vulture comes and eats it right out of your hand. And so that is parahawking. Science. I mean, no, it really, but telling, I was able to tell this environmental crisis story that was happening at the time, surrounded by me jumping off of a mountain. See? Just gotta jump off mountains to do what I want.
Do you get nervous doing any of this?
I think something's wrong with me, because no, I don't.
I mean, I was nervous, like, today to do this. Like, I'm sitting on a chair with a microphone.
This is more dangerous, I think, for me, to be honest. I get nervous. I have strange fear. I don't like driving. So, like, driving a truck in New York City would be far worse to do to me than doing any of that.
So what's your favorite or the coolest adventure you've been on?
Oh, gosh. There's so many. I feel like I've... Iceland is one that sticks out. We flew over... So the cauldron of a volcano isn't always the most active part. This fissure, which is like a big artery of the volcano, had erupted on a glacier in Iceland, and we were going to fly drones into it. So we flew in a helicopter over it and then took people live into it, essentially. And then we were with a geologist who you know, doing science on TV, we did like 8 minutes of just flying drones into lava and finding the most amazing science. And then this guy, I mean, the geologist started crying. It was such a beautiful sight. So I think that's one that stands out. Vietnam definitely stands out too.
What about the most challenging?
Vietnam. I was 9 weeks pregnant when I went to hike in that cave, and I couldn't tell anybody. And so my blood pressure was all over the place, and it was one of the most challenging physical things that I've ever done in my life. So I'd say that one was, like, you know, it hadn't been discovered, so they didn't have, like, guardrails. So at every turn, you realize, no, that's dead. Like, that, well, whoa, that is dead. There were no rules within the Vietnamese cave inside the jungle that has tigers that nobody's ever been to. So there was just a lot of variables. So that one was, I would say, both scary and challenging.
How has our society shifted, or has our society shifted, from calling somebody like yourself a weather girl as opposed to a meteorologist, a scientist?
Not far enough. I'd say this morning, and probably many of you, if somebody asked you what you were doing, you may have said, I'm the weather girl from GMA is going to be speaking. So that's not what I am. It's an old term that has to do with people who did weather on TV a long time ago. I'd say, I'm estimating, but at least 90% of people that you see on television are scientists like myself. The other 10% may be grandfathered in. And there's nothing, I have nothing against that. It's a part of our history. It's a part of how television worked for a long time. But I do think that our science has come a very long way, and so has our society should. So there's just like that lag part. This morning it happened, and I always try to politely correct someone and say, actually, it's a meteorologist. Lots of thermodynamics that went with that one, you know? And I think most importantly, you wouldn't call a female lawyer a law girl. And I think that that's what it is. So
I think you should say to them, yeah, I was in a meteorology fraternity, so
that was, yeah.
I am not just a
weather girl. I don't know if
you're
familiar with VUSIT, but it is.
Yeah. You have a book, Natural Disaster. I cover them. I am one.
Yes.
And it's partly about you covering, doing your job, being a meteorologist, but also part about you suffering from depression.
Yes. And so this is where my whole career changed so dramatically. And recently, I realized that often when I was doing these big events, I'm the first person people see when they've lost everything. They may have lost their daughter and their husband, which is a real story about me walking up to a woman and shaking her hand. This is in Sandy. And her telling me the story a week later about her husband and her daughter dying. I'm the first face they see. There's a lot of strange and unique opportunity in that. As I've been covering these storms, every storm I come away from with more gratitude and more perspective, I'd say, on the world. But what was happening in my personal life, as my career was, and still, I've had such a great ride on the way up, my mental health has been all over the board. And so finally, I'm going back to why I wrote the book. I went to the publisher, Disney. It was the publisher that we can work with. And I said, you know, I really would like to tell a story about a little girl named Helicity who falls in love with weather. Helicity is my favorite tornado variable. It's what I wanted to name a daughter if I ever had one. But my husband was like, no, that's not happening. So I thought I would name a character that. They told me that a baby book isn't really, that doesn't really sound, it sounds like you should write for tweens. So they, and I said, well, I'm not a writer. I don't know if I should do that. And they said, no, just go try. So I wrote a couple of chapters and they were like, this is great. And I was like, me? You liked what I wrote? No. And then they said, we want to sign you for a trilogy for this tween book. And I was like, holy cow. So I start telling them what I would base the stories on. And those were my storm chasing stories. And they said, now that's a book. And all of a sudden, I'm telling them about, I was engaged and then ended everything 3 weeks before the wedding. And then all of a sudden, I'm telling them about my depression. And all of a sudden, I'm telling them about a suicide attempt. And I wrote a book about checking myself into a mental health hospital. So I went to write a baby book about weather, and I came away with a much heavier topic, but something that has brought me to this great place today, and that's talking about mental health. I want to make it, I think everybody's talking about it. I think the stigma is certainly out there still, but I think that we've come a long way. I think it's more than just talking about it. It's making people feel comfortable to find action. And that's what my platform has become the last couple of years without even realizing that this was going to become a part of my story, is that as I was covering these natural disasters, I was starting to realize how much in common my life had with them. You can have, and you do, need sunshine and heat and energy to make a thunderstorm and a tornado that something is so destructive. There cannot be even in San Diego, which is close, a series of sunny days that last forever. There has to be cloud. There has to be a thunderstorm. That's how our Earth works. It's a constant balance of trying to make the cold poles or trying to do unequal heating with the hot equator. And that makes storms. And our life is like that. And so I started realizing that my life and my personal life and my mental health, I've finally found ways to be a little less stormy and to be a more responsible natural disaster. And that's something that I wanted to share with everybody. And so that's the platform I've gone with and I've really focused on the last couple of years. And the whole thing I live by is, like, I say it all the time, but clouds don't last forever. They can't and they won't. It's not how the atmosphere works and it's not how life works.
If I ever had days where I was down, my mom would always tell me, go out in the sun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
like,
the sun's powerful, but so's the rain. And I think that's the part that I've come to understand in my science but didn't understand about life. And there was a long period of time where, both environmentally and because of different things in my childhood and a lot of, like, yearning for constant chaos, imagine I jump off of mountains, that I'm always looking for that, and that led me to some really dark places. So I've found the ability, much like I have in communicating my science of meteorology, I've found a way to communicate the psychology that I've learned from years and years of therapy and take those tools and to put them into books. And so that's what I'm working on now.
And you did, though. So you did write your book, and then you also have the Holicity Trilogy.
Yes. Yeah, so that one's out there. That one was a little easier, a little less heavy.
Your weather all around. I think we all know that at this point. But you also voice the storm-chasing alien character on Disney's Miles from Tomorrowland.
Yes. So I met the creator of that, and they were like, we're going to make you a character. We love this. Like a storm-chasing, like a Helen Hunt. Okay.
Perfect for you. What's food forecast?
Food forecast. So often people will... Probably one of the number one questions I get, especially in a setting like this, if we were to open it up, I'm sure someone would say, what do you think about climate change? And so food forecast was my answer to telling climate stories in a way that would connect to people so they could understand what's really impacting us. Agriculture and farmers are the people that tell those stories. I grew up on a small farm. I have stayed in contact with a lot of agriculturists. One of my favorite food forecast stories I told was about grass-fed, grass-finished beef. And I went down to Texas, where you would anticipate there'd be really conservative folks. And sure enough, he was on a horse, and he had guns in his pockets, and he's like a true cowboy. And he got off, and he said, we have to keep our environment right. We've got to take care of the soil. We have to, you know, he was so environmentally and climate-driven, climate change-driven, and protective of his climate, that he surprised me, and it was such a beautiful story to be able to tell that kind of dichotomy of what you expected of what you got. He kind of told soil sermons, I say. That's like the way that he told it. So that's what you'll find in Food Forecast, is a way to look at how our climate has evolved, but mostly what we've done to our planet and to our soil.
And you can see them all online. Are you filming any new ones?
Hopefully. We've had a big shakeup in our digital, but yes, okay. We should be able to.
So we'll wait for those.
Yes.
Now, I know this was a few years ago, but Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
You did excellent. Third place.
Thank you.
Overall, how was the experience?
It was the most life-changing. Like, I could never have expected what it did. I started the show 6 weeks after I had my son. So right after I had a C-section, and my doctor was like, okay, go for it. Neither of us knowing how physically taxing it would be, I don't think. But it was really mentally one of the best things that I've ever done. I learned so much about myself. It's why the show works still. It's why it's on for its 29th season or whatever it is. Because you're taking someone who's an expert at something and you're breaking them down all the way to their base. And then you're helping them find themselves again.
So I'm a salsa dancer. I love the Latin dances.
Yeah.
What was your favorite dance that you did?
See, I loved the tango. Tango was really special. I love a good foxtrot. I liked the quick step a lot, which people don't like the quick step, but that was probably my favorite. And I picked up the easiest, which was strange.
The quick step?
Mm-hmm.
Which is difficult.
Yeah, I guess. Everybody says it is, but I think I like the bounce. I like jive. I like that too.
So what did you do then with as far as your family goes? You had to go. I mean, this is like,
we
know how it works. Man. We've talked to a lot of people that have been on the show. I mean, you're practicing
4 to 7 hours a day.
A day. So where was your
Every
baby?
Day. Where was that baby? I know Val always says every time he had never seen a woman pump before. Like he wasn't even in his repertoire. So my partner's name was Val Chmerkovsky. He's at that time didn't even have, I mean, he kind of had a girlfriend who now is his wife, but he just was such a bachelor, you know, such a guy. And I was like, sorry, I got to go in this corner and pump. He's like, out of your boobs right now? And I'm like, yes, yes, that's how it works. So I was like the old lady. I'm 5 years older than him. It's not that big a deal. But we learned a lot about each other very quickly. When you're nose to nose with someone like that, you develop such a strong friendship. And I just saw him 2 nights ago at the premiere. And we really have stayed extremely tight. My husband and him love each other. Like, there's such a beauty in what you develop in the family of Dancing with the Stars.
Speaking of your husband, so yeah. When I started doing research about you, and of course you have to check social media, and I click on your husband's account, and I look, and I'm already following him. Why am I following this man? What is this? So I start scrolling through, and I'm like, oh, yeah, he's cute, and he has an adorable little kid, having no idea that this was your family. Yep. But I really don't know why I started following him. And we were talking earlier, and he kind of had, like, a social media sensation. And I think this has to be the reason.
It has to be. That's when people come to this story, I'm like, yep, it's dance walking. So he did a video called Dance Walking where he started kind of a, I don't know, like an exercise thing that he has inspired by somebody on Fifth Avenue. And then he did a whole bunch of follow-up stories. And you guys have probably seen it on Facebook. Yeah, like people are like, yeah, hold on, dance walking. That's my husband. He's like super awkward and tall and goofy. Yeah, that one. So that's how most people come to find him.
If I don't bring Matt Cord up on stage, he might show up at my house and... No. Come over here. Just come over here. It's hard. Let me just explain really quick. It's hard for Matt not to be the center of attention. So the fact that he's sitting over there and letting me do this is really...
That's so nice.
This is a lot for him.
I love you, Kathy.
I love you, too.
No, Ginger, the story, you met your husband.
Yes.
And it's got a Philly tie to it. A former meteorologist.
Yes.
Amy Freeze, who used to work here.
Yeah.
Brought your husband to a Soul Cycle class. You met, and then you... walk with him afterwards, and you both got lost in New York.
Yep.
And then one more thing. He proposed to you at the same spot where he first gave you your kiss?
Yes. He
okay.
is.
Thank you.
Thank you. That is all true. And Amy Freeze is a big part of the responsibility of why I know my husband. And Amy, I worked with, or in the same market in Chicago. So I had known her. We lived in the same building. So she had invited him to the event, or they knew each other at the event. And then she said, oh, my friend's going to walk home with us. And then... poor Amy, we didn't pay any attention to her. And just walked home, got lost in Central Park, and I broke up with him twice after that. But then we got married, and I had two of his kids, so I never let him...
You made it.
Yes.
And tying it all together, I actually worked with Amy Freeze for a short period of time.
See? Yeah. There's always a connection.
So speaking of you and your husband, you guys had a reality show.
Yes.
There was two seasons?
Yeah, it was a house renovation show. I wouldn't even call it. It was about my husband being terrible with tools.
I was just going to say, you were better than it than he was.
I've done it before, and I grew up with renovating. My husband really, like, had never held a power tool in his whole life before we did this show. So it was entertaining. I don't know if I would... I mean, we tried to do a second season in the DIY, and HGTV got bought out by a different network, so they stopped production on it. But I think I would do it again, just with more help from other people than just him.
What you do and where you are today had to have taken a lot of time, effort, work. How do you balance that, all of that work that you do, with being a wife and a mother?
I don't think I do. I think I just have a lot of great people around me. I think that... thinking that you can do it. I just do everything, and this is what dancing taught me. When I was going from LA to New York, working full-time both the jobs and having a brand new baby, every time I was with that baby, I was finally, and I think for the first time in my life, present. And that's what I focused on. So that this morning when I got in the car to go to work, I'm focused on work. Now I'm here. I'll be with my children later tonight. And those are the things, that's all that I can do. I've also just learned how to give myself a little more grace. And I surrounded myself with really great people. My husband doesn't just dance goofy. He's a really great dad. So he helps me kind of balance it. I mean, he really is. And then a really good nanny, and we fly our parents in.
Well, we want to get you home to your kids. So one last question that I ask a lot of my guests. If you could give one bit of advice to the people in this room and our listeners, what would you say to them?
My advice has changed a lot over the years. I think my latest advice is it really doesn't matter and nobody cares. It sounds horrible. Like, that's not going to make it on a poster anywhere, so I don't think that it's... And it sounds even worse coming from someone who talks about their suicide attempts and depression. But really, if you hear me out, that's how I get through, is thinking often that I ask myself every day if there's a frustrating moment or a guilty moment, is this going to matter tomorrow? Most of the time it's no. A week from now? If it's going to matter a year from now, I allow myself to put energy toward it. It's a form of a meditative step back, like a mini step back, where you kind of address that situation. And that has helped me and hopefully can help everybody. It's like obvious, but I think it's good to hear again. And then nobody cares. Of course people care about you. It's not that. Nobody cares. I've realized, I thought for a long time, and I don't know how your experience, in my career, I always thought people were coming at me. I thought that they were doing it because of me. I have come to realize how we are all in our own heads so much that nobody's doing anything to you. Very, very rarely is someone coming for you. And I think that has helped me come to this brand new place where I'm like, oh, they're in their own world. Okay. It's almost worse because I kind of wish they cared enough to come at me or do something manipulative to me. But in life, I think that's good to remember, is that if you need them to care, you have to make them care too. And you have to give them a reason to care. It's not their job to care.
You know what? I actually felt like that about dancing, and I became a better dancer myself when I realized that the other people in the room dancing were not watching me.
At all.
At all.
It's a great analogy, and that happens in all parts of life, I think. I think all of us think that somebody else is looking at you, wanting you to do something, and they're not.
They
don't care. They're thinking so much about themselves. I've been thinking about myself this whole time, and none of you, so I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Ginger, thank you so much for coming to Her Story.
Thank you.
And sharing your story with us. We really appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ginger Z. Thank you all so much for coming. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to listen to Her Story. You can also check out the podcast page, 957benfm.com. I'm on Sunday mornings at 7:30 every Sunday. We have a different amazing woman each week, so make sure you check us out. Thank you.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.